Lifestyle.
You'll forgive me if I don't stay around to watch. I just can't cope with the freaky stuff.
Welcome to the New Flesh Podcast, a podcast about horror movies and all things tangentially related to horror movies, horror in general, and the horror lifestyle. And this week we're talking about a mainstream, universal, wide release that is definitely more interesting than that might sound for what it is, but it also is, for me at least, a bit underwhelming. We're talking about Violent Night in theaters now via Universal, starring, I guess, Netflix star, you'd call him?
Yeah.
David Harbour.
Netflix made him and they can break him, goddammit.
I mean, I feel like he's breaking himself. No, this movie's he's good in it, and he has fun in it. And spoiler alert, the box office numbers just came in, and it did above expectations, Jesse. It did what, like 11.8 instead of the predicted 10?
Yeah, it's the last box office star in America is Tom Cruise, but the second to last is David Harbour, apparently.
Yes, his track record is brilliant, of course.
It speaks for itself.
Yes. The only other movie I can name of his is Hellboy, the Neil Marshall reboot.
Yes.
That bombed absolutely miserably. It wasn't David Harbour's fault. He's taking on would you call the Ron Perlman Hellboy an iconic role? It's tough because it's like,
I guess
those movies were probably pretty small, relatively speaking.
Yeah, they weren't huge hits, although they were, you know, what they made a lot more money than was the Neil Marshall Hellboy.
Yeah, the Neil Marshall Hellboy did very badly. I think there was even an article or an interview with David Harbour this week where he, you know, of course, was asked about that, because Hellboy grossed $21 million in the U.S. It only costs 50, but he's actually talking to Yahoo Entertainment when he said, you know, what did he learn from Hellboy? And he said, let's see, I learned not to fuck with an established IP. That's for sure. Don't fuck with a beloved and established IP. That's the biggest lesson I've learned. Whatever failures or successes that movie was, of which there are many, the movie itself is such a thing going for it that it was almost impossible. Something like Stranger Things or Violent Night, it's an original thing, so people can judge it when it comes out, when they see it. They don't have going into it so much stuff. That, to me, it's so what's so different about existing IP. I don't think people were that precious about
Hellboy,
the character that much. It just, I think that movie, like, I think that is like that's a true thing he said that, like, is maybe not the problem with here specifically. Like,
yeah,
I feel like that movie didn't look good. It was not good. It wasn't marketed well. He's right in that. I think the people who would want to see a Hellboy movie are the people who want, like, hasn't Guillermo talked about how he has, like, a trilogy capper that he wants to do for it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think I was just going to say, I think you're exactly right. Like, I don't think this Hellboy, like, didn't make that much money because of that, but it is true that the people most excited about a Hellboy movie are least interested in someone, in just like anyone being Hellboy. You know, they want to see
plugging in a random guy and doing a random movie that I couldn't even tell you the story, a sliver of it. I think Mia Jovovich is in it as like a bad guy.
She's the bad guy. She was fun. I saw that movie. I was in Rochester, New York, visiting my grandmother.
Farther from the city than you'd think. Outside,
yes.
It is a long drive.
It was a plane ride for my took my daughter to visit her great grandmother. And since there were tons of adults there, and it was like the evening, we were doing an Easter thing, and I was like, oh, well, it's the evening, and like stuff's kind of winding down. I'm just gonna go out and see a movie. So I went to see Hellboy by myself at the theater I used to go to as a kid and when I was visiting my grandparents, and I was struggling to stay awake. That's why I remember it. And I cannot remember. Yeah. Like, same as you, I cannot tell you a single thing about what happened in that movie, except that I thought that Mila Jovovich did a good job, which is true of so many movies with her. I can't remember what happened, except I thought she did a good job. But yeah, he made this like completely lame, garish, like just not quite Hellboy movie.
Oh yeah, I forgot that. Like the whole thing of it was like, it's Hellboy, but it's R-rated, which is another like hook that should have worked.
Yeah.
But like the movie just looked so bad and was so bad.
Yeah.
That, yeah, it did not leave a mark. But
yeah, he was also in Black Widow, I forgot. So he's the, that's, so box office, he's back to box office gold again.
David Harbour. He's a movie star, officially. So we are talking about Violent Night, the movie that is in theaters now and honestly has now, what, another week and some, like a week plus like the week before, the few days before Thursday when Avatar comes out or whatever. Like, it has all this time. It has like a long runway to just keep making, you know, not a ton of money, but like a respectable amount of money.
It's gonna do well. Yeah, it's. I think it's already like on course. Like it's something like it's more like Barbarian, where it's like once you get a decent opening weekend off of out of it, like it'll run. Okay. I think people will probably like it actually, regardless of what we think of it. I think the audience that wanted to go see that in the theater probably was like, yeah, that was fun. Yeah, I think it's gonna do well.
It does what it says on the box.
Yes.
Is like the first thing I would say about it and the first thing I did say about it in my review. And I have more to that thought, but we'll get to that later. I just checked. It got a B+ cinema score. What do you think of that?
I mean, by the weird standards of cinema score, that's like a B+, which for me is like a movie I liked a lot and like, you know, is one of the 20 or 25 best movies I saw in a given year. Yeah. I know for cinema score, that's like audiences were dissatisfied and awarded it a mere B+. But yeah, like you said, for horror, then it kind of flips back the other way where like that's like an A++ for a horror or horror adjacent audience.
Yeah, like Bones and All got a B. Don't Worry, Darling is a B-. I'm trying to think. Halloween Ends got a C+, which is like astounding. Like, so did Pray for the Devil. Wow. Those are like bad. I mean, I guess that's what horror movies get, right? Like when they're not satisfying.
Yeah.
Black Adam's a B+, by the way, also. And I bet The Rock like probably tweeted like a congratulations to himself for that. Like, oh my God, B+ cinema score. People love us. Like he's really milking anything he thinks is popular about the movie. Anyway, I guess we're getting right into the news of the week. Before we continue with the bits and pieces, I'm going to go ahead and plug the Patreon, of which there is so much content, you guys. We are brimming with content. We talked about, oh God, we had a separate recording session. What did we talk about last week? We talked about me getting food poisoning in Chicago. We mostly talked about Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery, which is, I was going to say, in theaters now. No, it isn't. It was in theaters for 1 week, and Netflix says, no Glass Onion for you. You must wait until December 23rd or something. It is on Netflix around Christmas time. And that's when you can watch it. But if you saw it and you want to hear us talk about it, we did. It's there. We also talked about Andor and television pacing. I think we talked about, I was on my way to go see Strange World, so I didn't talk about it yet, probably. We've got so much stuff on the Patreon. That was last week. This week, we've got, including, you know, we're doing bits and pieces of horror adjacent stuff now. There was so much news of the week that wasn't horror adjacent that Jesse and I did a whole bits and pieces non-horror edition just on like industry stuff. You know, there's the Indiana Jones 5 trailer, the Guardians of the Galaxy 3 trailer. There's the Transformers, whatever the fuck trailer. There's Ben Affleck trashing Netflix. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. So I wanted to just do that. And then in addition to that, in the weeks to come, we've recorded episodes on Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. We've recorded episodes talking about Will Smith in Emancipation, post Oscar slap Smith. Huge news. And we've got The Whale, of which I attended the premiere and had a weird time there, which I can talk about. And Jesse also saw The Whale. And I think we agree about it, but I haven't seen him write anything about it yet. So I don't know.
I'm holding my cards close to the vest. No, I feel like I might have liked it a little more than you, but we'll see. We'll talk about
it. I think on one thing we agree. Correct me before I say this. Sadie Sink, another Stranger Things person?
Yes.
Okay. Boy, is she fucking awful in that movie. Holy crap.
You know,
maybe
what?
the worst performance I've seen this year. And it's not entirely her fault. It's like the writing of the character that's just like, why would you make this a character in the movie? Like, this character's bad. I don't like her. I don't want to spend time with her. I know that's the point of it, but
I do agree. I've seen her. I like her on Stranger Things, but I don't really know why, because it is partially her performance style on that show. It's very, and then David Harbour is in this too. I think everyone on that show, or a lot of the performance on that show, are hitting it way too hard, like all the time. And there's no like kind of subtlety or subtext or like quiet to any of their performances. And Aronofsky certainly doesn't rein that in The Whale. And she just hits everything so hard. It's a really baffling character and performance. And you're right. Some of it's the writing, but some of it is like, she is kind of like that on Stranger Things also. There's kind of a free floating hostility that I think they think is spunky, but it's just like her yelling everything. It's very weird. It's a weird thing.
Darren said the strangest thing. I say that like he's a friend. Darren Aronofsky, the director of The Whale, notably not the writer of The Whale. The writer of The Whale is Sam Hunter, the guy who wrote the play Darren Aronofsky went and saw 10 years ago. And was
he must have been in a different place. I mean, when he saw that fucking play, because is this play from 2005? What's going on here? And I guess it's from a little later than that, but it's still... Not to get into this movie now, but my main takeaway from this movie was, boy, that play must have sucked shit.
I know. That is my takeaway, too. I'm like, you just, like, it's the prestige movie version of a terrible fucking play that was, like, terrible from conception to execution, I imagine. I don't know what the play looked like, if it was, like, an actual big guy or, like, the prosthetics that, like, Darren is so weirdly proud of. I keep saying Darren. Aronofsky. Why do I say Darren? I don't know this man. We've never met. I was in the room with them, and I'm like, yeah, it was me and Darren.
Yeah, me and Darren.
And Chris and Jim. Of course, Chris Rock and Jim Gaffigan, who were sitting near me, weirdly. Anyway, that's the type of stuff you'll hear us say on the Patreon bonus episode about The Whale, which we are clearly like chomping at the bit to talk about. And we were going to talk about that's the end of the Patreon plug. All that stuff's on Patreon. Please get it. I also always forget to say, please rate us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It's very important on Apple. We can't get accredited a Rotten Tomatoes until we hit 200, and we're still not there despite all the years of doing the show and me knowing that there's more than 200 people listening. Just if you could throw us a 5-star rating, even, but a review would be lovely. Spotify, all you got to do is rate us if you're there. Thank you to all the people sending us the Spotify Wrapped of the year, like, you know, how many minutes you listen to the show. It is the coolest thing to see. We love it. So that's all the housekeeping. This is a Violent Night episode. Next week, we have another Christmas-themed episode with Shudder's Christmas Bloody Christmas from Joe Begos, indie horror guy. I don't want to say king, because I haven't really enjoyed a ton of his stuff. But we were going to talk about them together, but for scheduling reasons, it just made more sense to do Violent Night this week, which, you know, it was out on Friday. And then next week, Christmas Bloody Christmas is out on Friday. We don't want to get ahead of Christmas Bloody Christmas. We'll leave it to you guys to watch, and then we'll assemble on Monday, as always, and talk about Christmas Bloody Christmas next week. All right, what else did I want to talk about? I played a horror video game, Jesse. I played The Quarry, which I don't know if you know anything about, but it's like, it's more of a horror movie than a horror game. It's like you have like A, B options, you know? It's like a choose your own adventure type of thing. But it's just a horror movie with a bunch of counselors in the woods with a, spoiler alert, maybe, werewolf going around. And it's a lot of fun. And like, it has actors you'll recognize in it, like Skylar Gazondo. Is that his name?
Oh, yeah. From Licorice Pizza.
Yes, he is in it. And Lin Shaye. And the lead bad guy is Ted Raimi.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, it's a video game, but it's motion captured. So they all look like they're, you know, the person playing them. Ariel Winter from Modern Family. Brenda Song was in it.
Wow.
It was a lot of fun. I just had to plug it. And if you're a listener of the show and you want to play it, so basically it's, you know, because it's an AB thing, I beat the game, and it said, it gave me the credits. It was like, you know, here's all the people who didn't survive in your version. And then I looked up online, and it goes, oh no, there's a way to play it so all the counselors survive. So, I mean, I guess I got a good horror movie out of it. I don't think everyone survived. I'm going to make a great horror movie, but I am curious to play it again. So if anyone listens and has it and wants to play it, it has an online co-op element. So if you want to, I'd replay it, and I'd make all the different choices I made than the first time and see if we can save all these counselors. So this is a plug to play The Quarry with me. I also have the Evil Dead game, which I haven't played. I have all this horror stuff that I am trying to get into. So Patreon, if you're in Patreon, you're in the Facebook group, you can, you know, communicate that way. You can communicate on Twitter at Brett Redacted, of course. I wanted to plug also on Shudder now, A Wounded Fawn, a movie that Jesse mildly liked out of Sundance, I think was where you saw it and where I saw
it.
And I really liked. It's a Travis Stevens, the guy who did The Girl on the Third Floor, which I also love. It's a new movie. It's on Shudder. I think you should check it out. There's a new movie out now to rent called The Harbinger that is an indie that I missed at Brooklyn Horror Festival but just caught up with. And I gotta say, it is awesome. It is a COVID movie, but not in the grating way that every other COVID movie is. It's like actually about like the collective nightmare that is a pandemic. And it really, the horror of it is just so genuinely creepy and scary. And the movie is very haunting. I feel haunted after having watched it. I think everyone should definitely fork over the $7 and check out The Harbinger. And these are all the housekeeping. I finally did it. We're finally done. Moving on to the news. This is a preview of what you'll get on the Patreon, this type of news. This isn't exactly horror adjacent, but Jesse, I want to talk about it. Legendary Entertainment has formalized a deal with Sony after cutting ties with Warner Brothers. So are you to believe, do you believe this, which is what I believe, Jesse, which this is very much a repercussion of Warner Brothers deciding, you know, unilaterally without telling anybody that they're going to put all their big releases on HBO Max the same day as theaters?
I think that was part of it. I would guess that was part of it. I feel like there were other kind of, there was other like feuding going on. Cause listen, Legendary also, didn't they sign something with Universal for a while too? I feel like they were already on the outs with Warner Brothers. When this, like before this happened, but I could be wrong about that, but it does kind of seem like I think also like it probably speaks to, even if it's not about necessarily that specific pandemic decision, what's his face? Zaslav.
Oppenheimer is coming out through Universal.
Nolan. And I think he still works with Legendary. I think probably that's a kind of a feeling too, that, this Zaslav guy is maybe not the most like talent friendly guy, and maybe he's more of a bean counter, and some of these companies are like, well, we're gonna work with the studios who still like for sure want to make movies. And right now it kind of feels like Sony and Universal and Paramount are like the ones that are a little more all in on like putting out movies in theaters, putting out a variety of movies, working in a variety of genres, still sometimes hiring movie stars, where Warner Brothers seems like they want to be Disney. And you know, which is too bad, because Warner Brothers was like is a huge studio for so long and like has such a legacy of, you know, movie stars and great filmmakers and all this stuff. But it does kind of feel like Sony, Universal, and Paramount are sort of picking up a lot of stuff that Disney and Warner Brothers might have done, you know, years ago and now are not so interested in doing.
Yeah, under the new agreement, Sony will market and distribute Legendary's upcoming theatrical motion picture titles. However, select existing projects at Legendary are exempt from the pact, meaning like Dune Part 2 is still a Warner Brothers picture.
I assume the MonsterVerse stuff is going to stay at Warner Brothers probably too.
Yes, absolutely. In a press release, Sony and Legendary emphasized that the companies are aligned in their ongoing commitment to theatrical distribution as a driver for other downstream windows and theatrical windows' long-term value for films. So that sentiment is 100% a not-so-subtle nod at Legendary being like, Warner Brothers, put our fucking movies on HBO the same day. Was Dune one of those too? Dune was on HBO the same day, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah,
it was.
I mean, both Dune and Godzilla vs. Kong, which are the two legendaries that would have been on HBO, both did very well in spite of it. You know, it's still both those movies still made a lot of money. Arguably, how many hundreds millions more would they have made without that? Probably not that much. Probably not even 100 million more. But we'll never know. And people, you know, will prognosticate about that forever. But yeah, interesting times in movie studio verse. Now let's get to the real horror stuff. Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead. Oh, that's another movie I meant to mention earlier. I should have mentioned in my rap earlier. Is it? Did you see that at Sundance? Or did you?
I did not. I actually still haven't seen it. I'm probably going to watch it soon.
You should. Something in the Dirt. I mean, I'm a noted Benson Moorhead guy. I love The Endless. I like Spring. I like, what is it, Revolution? Is that what it's called? I like all their stuff. I haven't seen Moon Knight, which was their big jump into the mainstream. But keeping with their indie roots, Deadline reported that Benson and Moorhead's Rustic Films has inked a deal with V Channels and XYZ Films for a slate of 10 low-budget genre movies that the duo will produce. So this is not 10 movies are going to necessarily direct and write, but they're going to produce them with, I'm assuming they'll direct and write some of them. V Channels will fully finance the 10 pictures. Rustic Films will spearhead the creation and overseeing production on the slate. Production is due to commence in early 2023 on initial films. They'll be made by diverse filmmakers from around the world. You know, good thing in the indie world for these guys to be producing stuff. I think they're really talented. I'm sure they have a great eye for other talent, and I am very eager to see what comes from that. Let's get some horror television news updates. Jesse, Tim Burton's Wednesday now holds the record for the most hours viewed in a week for an English language TV series on Netflix. The series was number one in 83 countries, tied with Stranger Things season 4. I mean, I guess I believe that because they're telling me, but based on its cultural impact, I guess, or like, I haven't heard a single soul mention this thing ever. I know that's anecdotal and stupid, but I just have a hard time believing these things. I feel like it's like Netflix pumping their own stuff that they want to do well and signal they're going to keep going for a couple more years. But maybe all these people watched it. You watched it, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, I watched it to review it, so I watched it. But,
yeah, you don't count.
They didn't get their hands on my streaming numbers. But no, I think anecdotally, it certainly seems like people were watching this in big numbers. It makes sense. It's like very family friendly. Like you could, a large swath of age groups, I think, would be interested in it because of there's like Adam's Family nostalgia from the older millennials, and then like teen drama aficionados of whatever age, and also like actual teenagers, I think, would all be into this. So I believe them that it did very well. You know, it's just kind of weird because like the difference in a TV show's run on Netflix between the results for broke all records and was one of the biggest shows ever and nobody really watched it is like not that many episodes. It's like you could be the biggest Netflix show ever and get 30 episodes, or you can be like a negligible, you know, not that many people watched it and only get 20 episodes. You know what I mean? Like it's about the same. It feels like it's about the same sometimes. That's what's really weird about it. You know, but I certainly see some areas where they could do a better season 2. So I hope they do a second one.
They definitely are going to, based on these numbers. Good. Congratulations, Jenna Ortega, who rocks.
Yeah, Scream Queen Jenna Ortega stays winning, as they say.
She does. More TV news. HBO has unfortunately canceled Los Spookies, which is the horror-tinged comedy show that's a hybrid Spanish-language-English show created by Fred Armisen, Anna Fabrega, and Julio Torres, hilarious New York comedians. And then also Fred Armisen, who I guess fits that moniker as well. Yeah. Well, I mean, I just mean like those are people that like I see on comedy shows.
Yeah, they're on the scene.
For locals and young. And then there's Fred
Armisen's fucking old. He's like 60 or something.
Yeah, yeah. He's like an old hat New York guy. I'm sure that one that still describes him. It was just funny.
I saw him a year ago open for the Fiery Furnaces, the most hipster shit I've ever done. And he was really funny, actually. It was very specific.
I think he's very funny. I found the comedy special for drummers insufferable. I think he is very funny. Yeah. So just pour one out for Los Spookies. It was a great, great show. Friend of the show and past guest Sam Taggart was on it in both seasons, more in season 2. Great, great show. I really loved it. and I will miss it. Speaking of things being canceled, Mike Flanagan had a new show on Netflix that we haven't talked about, actually, called The Midnight Club. It was more kid-friendly. I mean, it's not, it's still a horror thing and not like children-friendly, but it was more YA, I would say, than other Mike Flanagan affairs. I have not finished it. I did start it when I had the early Netflix access, but I didn't finish it. But it's canceled. It will not be getting a season two. Mike Flanagan has graciously tweeted out, you know, all the story plot points and how they would finish up in season two, which I think is a great precedent to set for, you know, if your show gets canceled, your movie gets canceled, just fucking blog it. Show us what it would have been. I like that approach. So if you want to know what would have happened, check the Mike Flanagan Twitter feed, I guess. And with that news, I don't know if the timing of the news was, I feel like this came right before that news that like Mike Flanagan is now moving to Amazon and will not be doing stuff at Netflix anymore. He has now found a home at Amazon Studios with his buddy Trevor Macy. They have Intrepid Pictures. They will develop and produce projects that will exclusively stream on Prime Video now. And, you know, what do we have from them at Netflix still to come? We've got The Fall of the House of Usher, the brand new horror series based on the works of Edgar Allan Poe that starred, I believe he got kicked off, right? Frank Langella was supposed to be in that show, but he got Me Too'd off that set for being a creepy old man groping people, I think is what happened. So check out Mike Flanagan on Amazon in the future, but The House of Usher still will be on Netflix. So Jesse, you mentioned that Bed Rest was like this STX movie bound for a theatrical release. And now we have, it's coming out this Friday or wait.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. I think this Wednesday. It's coming out. We should talk about it next week. Released briefly.
Yes, we should. Yeah, damn it. We could have done Christmas Bloody Christmas today after all. but we will talk about Bed Rest next week because Bed Rest is debuting this Wednesday on, if you remember last week, I think we mentioned.
Oh yeah.
Tubi.
Oh yeah.
Fuck yeah. Tubi.tv or, you know, check your local listings on your, what, Chromecast or your Fire Stick. You can get Smart Tubi. Yeah, it's all free. You can get it. And you will have to watch commercials when you watch this movie. There's even, you know how like, I feel like Peacock has commercials for everything, but when they have like a Halloween Ends, you know,
yeah,
like
day
a
and premiere kind of thing. Yeah.
They do not put commercials in it, which is the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Not at Tubi. Tubi does not have the money for that. They say, no. You're coming to Tubi to watch our premium content. You're going to have to watch the commercials like everybody else. I appreciate that, you know.
Tubi's Tubi, motherfuckers. Yeah, there's no exceptions here.
Socialist approach, I guess. I don't know. I appreciate it to a degree. But like, I think we've joked in the past. When Tubi starts doing original content, I'm out. I'm just here for the cool streaming catalog. But I don't know. This is not a Tubi original in the sense that they made it. This is a Tubi original in that it was an orphaned theatrical release. Yes. So I'm in. And it stars Melissa Barrera from In the Heights and Scream 5. And it's written by Lori Evans Taylor, who wrote Final Destination 6 and is making her directorial debut here. So that movie, I don't want to even read what it's about. We will be talking about it.
I'm super excited. I'm so excited. Every time I think Tubi can't get any more awesome, they'll just like start showing a theatrical release instead of you know, in addition to all their really good archival stuff. Didn't they also in quick order make a remake and then a sequel to the remake of Terror Train that I have not watched?
That's my next bit and piece. So Tubi premiered a remake of the 80s slasher Terror Train. They premiered it at Brooklyn Horror Festival and screened it there in a theater. I didn't go, which I kind of have regrets about not going. It must have been, you know, the only chance you'll ever get to see that movie in a theater. but it's on Tubi now. You can watch their remake of Terror Train, which I'm sure I've heard is very bad. It looks very cheap and very bad. It looks like everything you'd expect of a Tubi original of a sequel to an 80s movie, which I actually watched the 80s original on Shudder. I had never seen it.
It's,
I know you were...
Right.
You didn't like it that much. I thought it was great. I had a really great time with it. It's like a whodunit. It's a lot of fun. But anyway, Jesse just buried the lead there. Tubi did that remake that just came out like a month ago. And surprise, Terror Train 2 is coming out on New Year's Eve. December 31st, 2022, Terror Train 2 drops on Tubi. So that means there are two Terror Train movies out in 2022, of which I've seen neither. So we've got to catch up on that too, right? We've got to do a Terror Train.
The Terror Train, the Tubi Train.
The Tubi double feature. Yeah, the Tubi Train double feature. That sounds like a bonus episode to me.
Yeah.
maybe we'll do that. So again, the Patreon is really thriving. We're just doing so much content. And while we're talking about Tubi, why don't we talk about this weird trend of, I think it was Winnie the Pooh entered the public domain and immediately some guy made like a horror movie that was like, you know, a Winnie the Pooh horror movie set in 100 Acre Woods or whatever. And that's coming out soon. And it's actually getting a theatrical release via like Fathom or some sort of bullshit, you know, fake distributor thing. But now we're getting like an onslaught of these. Did you know there's another one called The Mean One? That's like an unofficial Christmas horror movie where the Grinch is a slasher and the Grinch is played by Terrifier 2's David Thornton Howard.
Oh, I did not know that he was playing the Grinch. Wow.
It's actually David Howard Thornton. I say it wrong every time.
Or I guess he's playing like the Grink or something.
The Grink. If you don't know what the Grink tweet is, go Google that. It's the funniest thing, funniest tweet of all time. The Mean One is what they keep calling him. They won't call him the Grinch. But like I read the description, and it is kind of clever in that the girl in the movie is called Young Cindy You Know Who instead of Cindy Lou Who or whatever. I mean, clearly not very clever, but it's definitely first drafty, exactly what you'd expect clever from this. So this is allegedly getting a theatrical release as well on this week, December 9th. I don't know what that means, but it's on a poster. So The Mean One is I want to get like a public service, like kind of like a warning against these movies, right? Because like every outlet, because they get clicked on, and I understand why they do it, even Yahoo does it, like everybody writes up like the Winnie the Pooh horror movie, right? To the point of like mainstream, like Entertainment Weekly probably wrote about it, you know, on their online website. And like that gives these movies a sheen of legitimacy that I do not think they have earned or deserve. I have not seen them yet. I will watch them, but I just want to warn everyone. These are like dudes just making movies with their friends, inserting a character that's in the public domain, and then kind of using the online grift click system to make it into a thing that people are talking about. Like I've heard, you know, I don't know about you, but like, are you like normie friends on Facebook, like talking about the Winnie the Pooh horror movie? It's one of those things that like, it's a link people share around in the way that I haven't gotten more texts than I have about any movie ever than I have everyone texting me the link to Cocaine Bear.
Uh-huh.
It's like, it's like a specific type of snakes on a planey viral marketing that often does not translate to any type of money.
Well, I'm going to call forward and say that we'll talk about this in a little bit. That's kind of what Violent Night is going for, isn't it? Like the collegehumor.com video trailer turned into a feature film, even though I don't think this was ever a collegehumor.com trailer, technically.
No, you're right. That's exactly what it is. And that's exactly what the Weird Al movie is, if we're talking about not horror. But you know what? That movie, I want to give it more credit than some. It was kind of funny, but it is definitely a Funny or Die sketch made feature length. But yeah, there's something, I don't know if you've seen or if you're getting all this annoying, like you see all the Winnie the Pooh links everywhere and everyone sharing it as if it's like a real thing. And it's just like, no, it's like public domain play. Like it's just,
I kind of enjoy the hucksterism of that. It's kind of a bummer when it works so like a charm. People who don't really pay attention to movies are suddenly paying attention to this garbage. But I kind of feel like I got to hand it to him. That's kind of an Ed Wood style, you know?
Yeah. I guess you're right. I guess I should tip a hat instead of be annoyed. But I just it worries me that, you know, someone will watch that and then pretend and then like go on a soapbox about how the genre's bad or something. Like just like that's not real stuff. I don't mean to slag indie horror or anything, but like that is a specific type of huckstering that I don't know. I have another one. There's a Bambi the Reckoning, Jesse, is coming.
Yes,
and Peter Pan Neverland Nightmare. It's just like we're about to get a ton of these. I think the floodgates were opened with Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey going viral enough that it got attention and is getting a February 15th, 2023 theatrical release. I feel like like there's something, there's a difference between like a Terrifier 2 getting a theatrical release and getting word of mouth and doing well and stuff like this. I just don't, you know, these are not going to replicate Terrifier 2 is my point. These are not going to be some box office hits. They're going to trick some people into going, and the movies probably will be bad, but I'm open to the idea that they're not, and I hope to eat my words there, but I don't think I will. We got to talk about Cocaine Bear. I didn't watch the trailer. I don't watch trailers, but I didn't realize it was written by Lorden Miller.
Oh, are they writing it or are they just producing it?
It says it was written by them. You're wrong. Right. I'm wrong. Excuse me. It's an interestingly worded sentence. Written by Jimmy Warden, period. Phil Lord and Chris Miller produced. You're right. It's based on a true story. 175-pound black bear found dead from an overdose after ingesting massive amounts of cocaine that was dropped in the woods by a drug smuggler. And I think they turned it into like a Coen-y comedy. Like, what does this look like?
It's funny. You know, it's looks
the CGI bear looks very bad from the screenshots I've seen. That's all.
Yes, that is true. It looks like it's not really a horror movie, but it looks like more of a horror movie than I was expecting, or at least like kind of Violent Night style, where it looks like there's like kills, you know what I mean? Like funny kills. Like I thought this was going to be more of a crime comedy where there's like, yeah, there's a bear is sort of a wild card, but it's really about these bumbling humans. And maybe that is what it's actually about, and the trailer is just disguising it. But the trailer really makes it look like it's mostly a bear stalking and killing people. And then maybe there's some crime stuff going on, you know, tangentially to that. So I was like, oh, this looks a little more like a kind of violent horror thing than I had thought from the description.
But oh, that's cool. That is not. Yeah, I didn't expect that. And now I'm looking into it. I'm like, oh yeah, they're kind of like, you know, inspired by true events. It's not like based on a true story. It's like,
I'm sure it's not going to be. Yeah, I'm sure it's not going to be like hardcore horror. I'm sure there's going to be like plenty of wannabe Coen's comedy.
The guy who wrote it wrote The Babysitter 2. And like that was like the worst fucking movie I've ever seen.
I've actually not seen that. I only saw I got off the train after the first one for that one. But that was bad enough. So I can only imagine how bad the second one was. Yeah, I mean, the trailer looked kind of like, it looked like a movie I would definitely see. It's got like, yeah,
I don't know. I kind of want to modify my initial take that it's going to be like a Snakes on a Plane level, not a hit. I feel like actually it could translate, because it does. If it is fun, it will translate. I just don't know.
This is, I feel like this is like a micro trend, or like you have to stretch a little bit, but like with The Menu and Violent Night, which are not that similar really, but they're doing similar levels of business. And Barbarian,
I didn't
too.
Mention The Menu held like -35 this weekend. Like it did very well.
Yeah. I think those Barbarian's full on a horror movie, but like Barbarian, The Menu and Violent Night to me, that's kind of like, okay, if you mix in some like actual stars, not always, Barbarian wasn't really advertising Justin Long, he's not that big of a star, but like the other two have some actual stars and an intriguing premise that is like horror-y, but it's not promising full-on, you know, slasher style horror. And I feel like Cocaine Bear could be in that vein, where it's sort of like, oh, the sort of like adventurous moviegoers, but who don't necessarily want to see something Oscar-y or whatever, might go for those things. It kind of feels like it's like an emerging, like, to the side genre, the like horror adjacent dark comedy thriller. It seems like those, for whatever reason, those movies seem to be kind of connecting with audiences, maybe just because that's not something you can get at home as easily. You know, there's not like a TV show that's just like The Menu or just like Violent Night. So I feel like Cocaine Bear might hit that Violent Night Menu audience, whatever that is. That's just a guess.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how it does. I don't want to make any prognostications. The cast is Keri Russell, Ray Liotta, Alden Ehrenreich, O'Shea Jackson, Jesse Tyler Ferguson. Good cast, directed by Elizabeth Banks of Charlie's Angels fame, the reboot.
That movie's okay.
No, it's not. We're going to move right on. Moving right on. There's a new horror movie called it's a horror comedy called The Blackening that was a comedian I actually know, Dwayne Perkins, and a few other sketch people in a sketch group, I believe, wrote this video that went viral. And then they actually got to make a movie that was directed by Tim Story. And it premiered at TIFF to very divisive reviews. Some people loved it. Some people thought it was terrible. But it got picked up by, I think, Media Rights Capital or whatever that company is.
Uh-huh.
And it's coming out June 16th, 2023, which is Juneteenth weekend. And the movie centers around a group of black friends who reunite for a Juneteenth weekend getaway, only to find themselves trapped in a remote cabin with a twisted killer, forced to play by his rules. The friends soon realize this ain't no motherfucking game. Sounds like a Too Late Saw parody, maybe, but it's going for like Scream, but for black horror, or, you know, black, not like like, you know, there's like, what do you call it? Stereotypes about black people in horror movies and how they always die first and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's definitely sending up that idea. And the cast, the only name I recognize besides Dwayne Perkins is Jay Farrow. Jay Farrow's in it, a bunch of other people. Oh, Jermaine Fowler, a lot of comedians. So check that one out, The Blackening, in June. I wanted to mention there's a Netflix movie from the director of Cold Prey, which is a really good horror movie. It's called Troll, and it's a Norwegian kaiju movie.
Oh, I watched this. I reviewed it.
How was it?
Well, first of all, you should know it's from my man, Roar Ugsaug.
Yeah, yeah.
That's Ugsaug, sorry, Cold Prey Ugsaug.
Guy.
Yeah, yeah. I think of him as the Tomb Raider guy. I've never seen Cold Prey.
You should definitely watch Cold Prey. It's not okay. It's whatever language I'm sure this movie's in or whatever. It's not English.
Yeah, yeah. The only one of his I've seen besides Tomb Raider is he did one called The Wave, which is like a disaster movie.
Oh, yeah.
Troll is kind of fun. I kind of found it refreshing because between this and The Wave, what Uthag is really doing, and I don't know if Cold Prey is like this too. It's probably not because it sounds like it's a little more, even more stripped down, but he's kind of doing Roland Emmerich style movies, but like if Roland Emmerich had a little bit of taste, like not like it's super artsy, just like if he wasn't a dumbass, like so The Wave is like a disaster movie, but it's like kind of a respectable one. It's not quite as like sappy as The Impossible, but it's not quite as stupid as like 2012 or something like that.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, and this one is kind of, this sounds like the guy, the tweet about the Boss Baby, a guy who's only seen one movie. Yeah. But this Troll is actually a lot like the 1998 Godzilla, but like if it were kind of good. Like
that sounds good.
Yeah, it's not like fantastic. It's not like, oh shit, this really rocks hard. Like it really is just like kind of an Emmerich-esque disaster movie where like with a smaller cast. But it's cool. Like I thought I had a good time with it. I gave it a positive review. I think he's a good director. I also really liked his Tomb Raider movie.
So Cold Prey is just a straight up Norwegian slasher movie that he directed.
All right.
And it was so well received, Jesse, that there are two Norwegian sequels that he did not direct. And in 2017, WWE Studios, when they were making horror movies back then, remember, they bought it to remake it. And then it just never happened.
Huh.
Good movie.
Yeah, Prey, the Troll. If you're like into monster movies and or disaster movies or liked Cold Prey or like The Wave or like the 2018 Tomb Raider, I think any of those things, you should check out Troll on Netflix. Like not super long. It's like under 2 hours, which is nice.
That's great. I want to shout out other movies that are coming to streaming. I already mentioned a lot of them, you know, talking about Christmas, Bloody Christmas next week. Troll is out now. Something called American Carnage with Jenna Ortega on Hulu is listed as a twisted thriller comedy, not quite horror. I'd watch that. Nanny's out on the 16th, which I've seen. I don't know if Jesse saw.
I haven't seen it yet. I gotta watch that.
Yeah, I may have a link for you, sir. And then
I think I have a DVD of it somewhere. I think they sent
it. Scare Package 2 is coming out on December 22nd. Spoiler alert. I mean, I hated the first one, but I watched this and it's fucking insufferable. It's terrible. Scare Package 2, Rad Chad's Revenge on Shudder December 22nd. There's something on Hulu now. Mark Dusek on Roger and Me told me a little bit about it. Darby and the Dead. Did you watch that?
Oh, I didn't watch that. I thought it's like a Hulu. I thought it was going to be on Disney Plus, like, because I thought it was like a family thing.
Yeah, it's like a Searchlight Hulu thing. Was not expecting that, but I heard it's okay. It's a supernatural comedy. The Eternal Daughter is not only in theaters now, it is also day and date. You can rent The Eternal Daughter, A24's new Joanna Hogg movie. Spoiler alert, it's sort of The Souvenir Part 3. I don't know if it was you or Mark that called it more like a souvenir, The Souvenir Coda, but I really like this movie. And it's horror tinged, but don't go in expecting a horror movie.
I would say it's I called it, this is my pithy thing, letterbox thing that I never elaborated on. Eternal Daughter is the Season of the Witch of the Souvenir series.
Ooh, yeah, very good. I quite liked it. If you're into Joanna Hogg's very personal filmmaking, check it out. I already mentioned Wounded Fawn, and I think we're ready to talk about Violent Night right after I mention, Jesse, that Kevin Smith has a movie theater now. Did you know this?
I didn't know this. Is it in Red Bank?
It's in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey. It's called, it's called Smod Castle Cinema. It was formerly the Atlantic Movie House. I think basically what happened is a theater closed and he bought it to keep it alive. Very Quentin Tarantino of him. And I assumed it was going to be like him just showing his own stuff. And like, yes, there was like the Smod Castle. There's like film festivals and indie stuff, and he's supporting all that. But it's also just like a mainstream movie house. Like they're showing like The Menu and whatever else is out. But I had to mention it because he's doing a double feature of Terrifier and Terrifier 2 that he himself, Kevin Smith, is, you know, moderating a Q&A with the cast and crew on December 10th. And I thought it was funny, and I'm wondering if this is how the ticket pricing works for all of his events. It's a $37 ticket for two movies, which if you're a Kevin Smith dork, you'll know that's a reference to the 37 dicks in Clerks. Even the ticket pricing in Kevin Smith world is an inside joke for the fans. You gotta love it. So if you haven't seen Terrifier yet, or Terrifier 2, or you have and you just want to see him again on the big screen in the same room as Kevin Smith in New Jersey, December 10th, you can see Terrifier and Terrifier 2 with Kevin Smith. Jesse, we got to make a pilgrimage to the Smod Castle Cinema sometime.
I'm up for it. I love going to a movie theater I haven't been to that is probably not that different from any other movie theater.
Yeah, they're showing,
sounds sarcastic, but yeah.
But no, you mean it. I mean it too. Showing it. They just are showing everything anything else any other theater would show. Avatar, Puss in Boots, Babylon, the Whitney Houston movie. It's just a regular movie theater. And this film festival actually is... it's the first annual one, and it looks like he's supporting indie and, you know, low budget filmmaking. And that's really cool. Kevin Smith can still make me feel things, even though his movies don't. all right. Let's get into the main event that I can't imagine spending too much time talking about. there's plenty to talk about, actually. I think it's just fascinating, right? That like, it's definitely an R-rated movie that it is very R-rated and gleefully so. And it, you know, is doing respectable business, is a mainstream release. There's something strange about it. I don't know if it's because it's like, is it because it's just so like pitched as like such a mashup of other things? Like, I feel like it's just like, it's John Wick Santa. It's Die Hard Santa. Home Alone, but you know,
but actually violent. Yeah,
which is like I talked about on my other show. I was like, I feel like we've all seen that viral clip of like Home Alone, but there's gore in it, and it's like that's what this is. Someone like re-edited Home Alone to put gore in it. But yeah. I wish this movie was fully that, because the Home Alone sequence was like my favorite part.
It is. I think you're right. It is. It feels a little bit calculated to be all these different things, and it kind of all starts from a general sense of like, is this a parody trailer from some like hacky comedy website? And it goes from there to like, well, what kind of different hacky Christmas parody, you know, irreverent things can this be? So like you said,
and they cast Beverly D'Angelo of National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
And it's that kind of literal minded thing too, where it's like, oh yeah, isn't this clever to have the star of National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation? And it's like, I guess. What the fuck does that have to do with anything? Like, she's an actress. She's in a ton of stuff. I just don't, like, have that. It's like, it does seem like it's a movie for people who really love Die Hard, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, and Home Alone, a.k.a. the most basic shit you can watch at Christmas. This side of Love Actually. No offense, because I like Die Hard. Obviously, Die Hard's great. And, like, I saw Home Alone when I was a kid, obviously, and had a good time. And National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation is fine, I guess. I've been kind of mystified by the love for that movie my entire life. Ever since I was like 9, I've been sort of like, what? This? Okay. Funny Farm's funnier. it's my Chevy Chase hot take straight from my pre-adolescent years. But you're right. Like, it kind of feels a little like, yeah, why isn't this on a streaming thing? It's such like a, it's not IP, as David Harbour talked about in the interview, but it like almost might as well be. It's like, it's for fans of IP. It's exactly for the people who are like, why won't they make more original movies and then never see anything that's actually original and good? You know what I mean? Like, yes. They want original movies that remind them of The Matrix or whatever.
There are people complaining about there being nothing out now. And there's so many movies out now. Like, I just went to the Village East, and even me who sees everything, there's like five movies there I haven't seen.
Yeah. No, there's tons of, I mean, like, to be fair, we live in New York where you can always see like 10 movies. So like, there's like, even I try to see everything, and there are probably literally 10 movies playing at least in new release right now that I haven't seen, just because like, there's a lot of stuff out there. I haven't watched Bardo yet. But like,
I fucking did. That could be a 3-hour bonus episode.
If you ever get me to watch it, which is questionable at this point. But
you're like, please don't win any awards. Let me just
fade into obscurity. I have just the weird idea in my head that Bardo stars in Iñárritu, even though I know that's not true.
Well, it's the whole point. It may as well have. Yeah.
Every time I see the still from it, I'm like, oh yeah, there's Iñárritu like in the movie. But I
well, buddy, it's true. Definitely meant to look exactly. I'm sure that's the casting choice. Yeah.
So I'm sympathetic to people who live, you know, maybe in just like a kind of in the middle of the country or whatever, or wherever, where there are just like 8 movies playing at any given time maximum. And like right now, but also the average person doesn't see more than like a movie every couple months. So I'm not like the whole, there aren't movies playing thing. It's much like the complaints about like, oh, I'm so sick of this. I want original movies. And it's like, you guys don't ever go to see original movies. There's tons of original movies out. What you really want is something that's a lot like a Marvel movie, but maybe technically isn't. Violent Night feels programmed in that way. It's like non-IP IP. Because isn't like irreverent Santa shit. Yeah, Santa's the IP at this point. It's the sequel to Santa Claus the Movie, starring Dudley Moore. That said... you can feel the calculation in it, but that said, it is kind of fun to see a couple of these variations. It's kind of fun to see a variation on Die Hard, which, not to get into the like extremely basic normie, Die Hard is actually a Christmas movie, but like just the premise of Die Hard, that it's like this kind of, you know, slightly broken down regular cop, you know, thrust into this situation, and that holds true in Die Hard's 2 and 3 also. To have that be like, oh, it's like that, except it's Santa, not a cop, is kind of fun. And like you said, the like Home Alone, but with actually a horrific gore in it, is kind of a fun idea. And I wouldn't say that those things are enough if you're like not already interested in seeing a movie like this, but. Yeah. There are enough moments that I was sort of like, I kind of give this a pass. Like you said, it's doing what it says it's going to do. And it at least has a few different things going on rather than one thing over and over.
I guess that's all 100% true. And like, the rest of that sentence is, it does what it says on the box. And yet it's so uninspired about it.
Yeah,
uninspired. There's just like, it's just box ticking the entire time. Every reference is like shoved in your face. And like, they can't just reference the Home Alone stuff by like having the Home Alone stuff happen. They have to have a character say that she loves Home Alone,
yeah,
and then have another character say Home Alone later. It is like so, what is that? Spoon fed? Like,
yeah.
And also boring. Like that doesn't, if you're telegraphing your jokes, it doesn't make them funny. And like the particulars of like the home invasion plot, it's not, I mean, who cares about any of that stuff? And like, that is, I wish the movie agreed with that sentiment of who cares about any of that stuff, because the movie is way too invested in the intricacies of its home invasion / eat the rich plot, which is, not only is it far too familiar recently, just like every movie has done this exact same rich people getting their comeuppance shit, but it's like the specifics of the home invasion and like the just being held at gunpoint, which is all this stuff is supposed to be tinged with comedy, but it's just so unfunny that I think it's because all the characters are just boring one joke archetypes. It's just so hard to get behind this movie for me, because it's so, first of all, if any movie deserved to be like 80 minutes, it's this one. And not only is it not like, oh, it's 90, we'll give it a pass, oh, it's 100, we'll give it a pass, it's like nearly, it's closer to 2 hours than it
is. It's like 103, 105, something like that. Is that right? It is definitely, yeah, but it feels long because it really should be much shorter, because it's sort of weirdly belabored in terms of like getting Santa into this house.
That's what I'm trying to get at. Like, why is it so intricate with like the plotting of the home, of the family and the home invasion? Like, I want to be invested in the characters, so I get why they're trying, but when the characters are this stock and boring and the plot is so not a, like, so a plot we've seen before, like, it just spent so much time on these elements where, like, you know, the bad guys all have, you know, Scrooge, his Leguizamo's name is Scrooge, and they all have little goofy nicknames, and all that's is supposed to be like enough to make me laugh. I just couldn't believe the shit that they wanted me to find funny. Like, I did find the opening scene funny, where like you're introduced to, it's actually the opening scene of the trailer though. You're introduced to Santa drunk at a bar, and you know, if you don't know what this movie's about, you're probably thinking it's just like a mall Santa. That's what everyone in the movie thinks. He's a mall Santa. But then, you know, he leaves the bar drunk in his sleigh and then pukes on someone. And like, that's, I mean, and that's the movie setting itself up for what you're going to get, I think. It's just like, if you think Santa, a guy dressed as Santa who's supposed to actually be Santa, if you think that guy saying shit, shit, oh shit is funny, then this movie is a barrel of fucking laughs for you, because that is every scene in this movie is just coasting on the idea that it's funny that Santa's in this situation.
Yeah. And you know what? I just checked. You're right. It is. It's almost 2 hours. I was wrong about that.
I couldn't believe it. And my friend, you know, he said to me afterwards, like, I felt like that didn't feel as long as it did. And like in the moment, I think I agreed with him. I'm like, yeah, that wasn't so bad. Cause it's like, I think because the third act finally starts to give you what you want from it. But man, I will not forgive. Like, I didn't forget how long it took to get there when it happened.
And no, like, it does. It's belabored, and like, there's no reason for it to be as I was sort of torn, because I appreciated that there was a little more effort into it. Sometimes when a movie gets so fast into the premise, it starts to feel like a fake movie. And this, I was like, okay, they do want, you know, there is supposed to be a sort of an emotional hook with there's. You know, so the idea is that this home invasion that Santa finds himself in the middle is people trying to rob a extremely wealthy family. And then within that family, there's like a immediate family of Alex Hassel, Alexis Louder from Cop Shop, who I loved in the movie. And their little girl, played by Leah Brady, who's like, they're like a broken family. They're like split up, the parents and the girl is, you know, dealing with that. And they're like the nice people in the family, in this family of kind of monstrous, greedy, rich assholes. So they like, that's sort of the rooty interest. Like, that's why we care what happens with the home invasion, because we don't want those characters to get hurt. And that's who Santa ends up talking to this little girl through kind of a, like, tedious mechanics on a walkie-talkie, and sort of, that's supposed to be sort of why he's motivated to like stick around and help. It's weirdly belabored. It's belabored and yet still kind of thin. There isn't really a bond between them. He just sort of, I mean, he just feels normal decency.
It also is like,
I don't want this girl to die. But like,
it just completely drops the whole premise of the idea that he's like a fuck up drunk Santa, like, as soon as the home invasion happens, right?
Yeah.
Which, like, I guess could be like interesting character wise, but the whole movie is just so lazy that it just feels like, yeah, you just need him to be sympathetic now, so he's sympathetic. Where, like, earlier he was a drunk, and that was the whole crux. And, like, it feigns at the idea of giving him, like, a backstory, and, like, that backstory itself is, like, I would say kind of funny and amusing.
Oh, yeah, okay. I just like that.
I like that. Yeah. But, like, at the same time, I feel like I don't know anything about him as, like, a character. So, like, they try to put all this, like, pathos on it, or, like, do they, like, they try to make you care about him, and like, because he's he's a drunk up top, and he's like, why am I doing this? But like, they don't explore that in any meaningful way. It's like the same, is this like what people call the Deadpoolification of shit, where like the same thing of like Bullet Train, Brad Pitt had like that reluctance. I don't know. There's some similarity to me.
There's sort of like an archness combined with an attempt at being kind of sincere that can be kind of off-putting. I did find it like kind of sweet. You know, I enjoyed the way it threads the needle of like this girl who, by the way, this is nitpicky, but like just as a dad of a 7-year-old, this girl, I'm pretty sure just by context, I believe she's supposed to be at least 8. And she acts really more like a 4 or 5-year-old. And maybe that was supposed to be part of it. because she kind of believes in Santa, you know, long, you know, maybe a little longer than some kids would. Although it's also not that unusual for like a 7 or 8 year old to believe in Santa, I don't think. And it's like, it's just a weird, I found the age of the age thing. It was one of those things where I'm like, I don't know if these screenwriters have ever like met a kid or like know what happens at different ages of kids' lives. Cause she really is like acting a lot like a 5 year old, but like, anyway, the kid whose big wish for Santa this year is my parents get back together. And I kind of enjoyed the like sincerity with which Harper's Santa character is kind of like, yeah, it's really hard, like being married. He basically like kind of gently tells her like, yeah, that's not something I can really do. And I don't know. I like that moment. I like some of those moments similarly. I just thought like that moment they get at kind of a sweet, bittersweet sort of sad, but still, you know, hopeful Santa Claus that I thought was kind of fun. And kind of, I did enjoy that the movie is like, does take itself seriously in the sense that it's not just being like Christmas. Am I right? Like you think Christmas is going to be like merry and fun, but like sometimes like people say shit and like throw up or whatever. Like, it's not quite that level of like, oh, this is so subversive. You know, you ever see like these like shitty indie comedies about Christmas, like Merry Friggin' Christmas with Joel McHale and Robin Williams. These things they're just like trying to be very knowing about like how miserable Christmas is. And this one actually, I thought in its better moments, gets at sort of a more bittersweet aspect of the holidays rather than just leaning hard on the like, it's so subversive to have Santa say fuck or like a gingerbread man, like, you know, flip somebody off or whatever. Like
it, yeah.
It doesn't lean too heavily on that stuff. And I would say also that like the actiony stuff, though it's not great, like what I said in my review for Pace is that like the trick to making one of these things work like this, when it's full of sort of hacky, like, oh, it's Christmas, but it's bloody. Speaking of a movie that we're going to talk about next week, the trick of it to me is like making if the action stuff is really good, then you're kind of like, oh, this is like actually kicks ass. And I wouldn't say this movie gets there with like the fights and stuff with Santa, but they were like decent enough, like fights where I was like, oh, at least these are like sloppy and sort of like they look painful and there's like some fun gore and stuff. And like, I felt like that was how I felt about the movie as a whole. Like, none of it's done especially well, but a lot of it is done better than it needs to be, as much as it is kind of lazy, that I was kind of like, okay, this, you know, this isn't Willy's Wonderland where like the action stuff is just like nothing, you know, like I thought the fights in this were like pretty good. They're kind of satisfying to see Santa Claus beat the shit out of some guys, not like amazing choreography or anything, but like, no, you know, there's lots
like
of good
you'd
props
expect more from the producer of John Wick being on it or something.
It definitely plays like a Wick ripoff rather than like actually by the, you know, produced by the main guy. But like, I don't know, I felt like the whole movie, I was sort of like, well, this is barely getting by, but I'm sort of with it.
Yeah, I was like just under that. Like a couple fun payoffs, yes. Like that Home Alone thing pays off well, and like there are some, you know, you definitely start to run out of like Christmas items to kill people with by the end. Like you got the candy cane, you got the icicle, the star on top of the Christmas tree. It's just like I should like this on paper, but. Like, it's like this argument I had with my buddy who I saw it with, which is like an argument we have when we disagree that happens quite often. I feel like he was like, you're supposed to like this, you know, like this is something, this is for you. Like, this is a horror, a main, you know, that why, how dare you not like this? And I resent the idea that like all you need for this to work is like it to, for like, oh, here's Santa, he's got a hammer and he's going to kill people. And like, I'm supposed to just like clap like a seal and like be happy. I like resent that. And that's why when it's not like I found it to be like lacking, I just like get mad when I'm supposed to just, when people say, yeah, it's good enough. I'm like, no, it isn't. Yeah. It's like, it's kind of lazy.
Here's the thing. It's not, it definitely, I get that completely. It's not at all for the like horror connoisseur.
Yeah.
And it is, but it is what, it is for what people who don't care about horror think horror people want to see. it's really for the like extremely basic, my favorite Christmas movie is Die Hard, like Home Alone nostalgic, like, you know, Deadpoolification is fair, although I like the Deadpool movies fine. It's like for that audience. It's for the like kind of normie audience that thinks they want something weird but don't actually want anything that's too far out of the box. And in the sort of in the spirit of like Roger Ebert, I kind of have to go, well, yeah, I'm not that audience. Like, I would prefer something that's funnier, certainly better written, better action choreography. But I kind of have to I get torn about this because I feel like Ebert didn't actually always do this because no one can, where you say, well, like, who's this movie for? And does
he had no sympathy for the Deuce Bigelow European gigolo. Let's
right.
Say
right. He didn't go, you know, or even like a lot of slasher movies, as much as he loved Halloween, if he saw like a junkie slasher movie, he would never go, oh, well, but for the slasher crowd, this would really work. And I get that. Like, there's limits to how much empathy you can have when a movie's in front of you, just not working for you. You can't just say, oh, well, the people who are supposed to like this will like it. Otherwise, you'd give, you know, 4 stars to every Marvel movie, because like those mostly do work for the people who really, really love them. That said, I don't know why. I just felt a kind of weird sympathy of like, yeah, I get who this is for with Violent Night. And I should resent it more because it's like not for any kind of like movie fan that I feel a lot of, identify with, really. But at the same time, I was kind of like, well, yeah, but this kind of works for that audience. And like, I kind of have to give it to that for that reason. Maybe because within that rubric, I feel like by those standards, it's doing a little more than it needs to. By our standards, it's doing less.
Yeah,
but like that's also why I gave it sort of a like affectionate mixed review, because I was sort of like, yeah, I don't know.
The like woman whose husband dragged her next to me at the movie, like normie viewer, was like mortified at the level of gore in this movie. So, like, I guess that's like a good endorsement. Like, she had to like, this woman was looking away and then also like looking at the people around her, like at disgust at like how they were reacting to like gory moments. So you, I guess people, that is a good, I guess that's like a good endorsement of what it's going for. That like, for like a normal person, just like who accidentally went and saw this movie, they like couldn't believe how fucking violent it was. Like,
this is the
like,
most fucked up shit they've ever seen. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I guess I have to like acknowledge that while I'm being negative about it. But like, there is like that edgelord drunk Santa shit that is like, yeah, I mean, I yeah. love Bad Santa, but like Bad Santa, well, yeah, was
Bad Santa's
15
so good
fucking
that it,
years ago or 20 it, years ago,
like, and it, I don't it kind of ruined it forever. It's nearly 20 years ago. Yeah,
it's,
it
oh my god, 2003. Holy shit. Yeah. I saw that movie in theaters with my parents when that which means I was 12. And they I like, it's one of those times where I know they liked it because they were laughing the whole time, but like we had like talks afterwards, like they were like upset that I made them see that.
Yeah. That's the thing. Bad Santa is so good that it tricks other filmmakers into thinking they can do it. Hence, every other bad blank movie in the past 20 years, and most teacher. Of which are not very good. Yeah, bad teacher, bad grandpa, dirty grandpa, bad, you know, bad moms, bad everything.
Bad Mom's Christmas.
That gymnast movie that is not called Bad Gymnast, but should have been. That's what Stick they were it? Doing. You know?
What is Bad the one Gymnast? With,
there's the chick from Big Bang Theory is in it. It's the, it was called the Bronze. It was like, it's exactly Bad Gymnast. It's like Bad Santa, but she's a gymnast instead of a Santa.
That's so funny. I have no idea what the fuck that is.
It's kind of funny. I mean, like, it's like half funny, but like, you know, but yeah, none of them were as good as Bad Santa. So it both encourages other people to think they can do this, which they can't because they're not Terry Zwigoff and not the writers of Bad Santa. I think the Coens did a pass on that movie, so like there was a high level of talent on that one. They're not Billy Bob Thornton. And it also makes every other
Ernie Mac and John Ritter, two deceased actors in the
game. Yeah, and they're both so good. They're both great.
They're both so good.
Funny.
Like, career funniest, maybe.
Yeah, they're definitely some of the best stuff they ever did in movies. And they're so funny. It's such a funny movie. So that kind of ruins it also. Like, because then you have a movie that's like, if it's like mildly amusing, you're sort of like, yeah, but Bad Santa is like already kind of had the last word on like Santa being a
it's
drunk.
So Bad Santa's so good, we all collectively forgot that they did Bad Santa 2.
Yeah, I never saw Bad Santa 2, and I usually see all kinds of
I walked out of that at AMC Empire 25 because I think it wasn't even that the movie was that bad. It's that it was, and then it's also the crowd was being very obnoxious, and I had to get out.
Yeah, just get out of there. If it's streaming free somewhere, I might check it out someday. But like, I'd rather just watch the first Bad Santa because it's really good. It makes it hard to do a good, you know, subversive Santa Claus movie. And I think we'll talk about next week a bit about like the Christmas slasher. Which this isn't really, but it, weirdly, the slasher stuff in it, I was like pretty into. Like you talking about that woman being outraged reminds me that actually I didn't look away, certainly, because it's all kind of comic gore. But there were a couple times where I was like, I like said something aloud where I went like,
yeah.
Like the, I'm not going to spoil the final big kill.
Oh, that one's great. I love that one. Even though you need CGI to do that one, it's still rocked.
But then, and then like the close-up at the end is not, or maybe it's CGI, but it's actually good CGI. The kind of close-up of the result of it is like really good, gnarly. And I laughed out loud and like, you know, in that moment, I was like, this is what this movie was wanting out of me.
I know.
For me to be laughing in disbelief. Yeah.
it needed to be at that register the whole time. And unfortunately, it just has like glimpses of what works. And like, it's so inundated with just like, the, you know, watching this fucking family that you loathe being like under duress in a house. It's like,
yeah,
so boring.
It's a shame. Like, I would say Harbour carries a lot of it just because like he is pretty likable and like he's fun to watch as Santa. So like that helped me through it too. And I kind of like the actors in general, like Cam Giganjet. I don't know if that's how he's Gigandet. I don't know how to say that name. He was like a big,
I always say Cam Gigante. I don't know what the fuck it is.
I like that. Cam Gigante. I like that. That's the, his
we're going to start calling him Cam Gigante.
His wrestler name, Cam Gigante, who was like a big, he was like a Screen Gems YA star who was like the bane of my existence in like 2008, because he would just be in he would just turn up and stuff, and I'd be like, this fucking guy, he was like in all these Sony movies and he was always terrible, but he's pretty funny in this as the like dumb actor husband who, just because like
I disagree, I mean, I really,
it's
fucking
not, it's not
him. Yeah,
it's not great, but like I like laughed at some of his dumb guy he just like, at least I was like, okay, he's playing a dumb guy in a way that I sort of found endearing, even though he's like the dumbest guy in the room at any given point.
Well,
he's not great. I just was like, I found him sort of amusing. But what's a bummer is Alexis Lauder, who I know, I mean, maybe it's just from Cop Shop that I think, oh yeah, because she's like barely been in, she was in The Tomorrow War. I don't remember her that at all, and I hated that movie. But in Cop Shop, she was like the main hero in that, and she ruled, and I thought she was so good in that. So then in this one, she's just like this chick who's just like the wife. And like, she's like, you know, her character's likable, certainly, because she's like the only person in the movie besides the kid who's not an asshole. But like, oh man, what a wasted opportunity. Having seen her be like a scrappy carpenter heroine in Cop Shop, and then seeing in this where it's like, oh, she's just sort of standing around and we hoping she doesn't get shot. That was disappointing. I didn't even realize at first that it was her. When I did realize it, I was like, oh shit, like that's a bummer, because I really like her.
I had that same exact moment like halfway through the movie when it has a close up on her. I'm like, oh, that's Alexis Lauder.
Yeah.
And oh yeah, they're not doing anything with her. Yeah. I also noticed one of the henchmen with a gun, who's like, his whole role is henchman with gun. I recognized him as one of the lead guys from Freddy versus Jason.
Uh-huh.
He's one of the teens that's I think like a stoner in Freddy versus Jason.
Okay.
So that's Brendan Fletcher I recognized in there. Who else was in that? I don't know. There's John Leguizamo, I like, but he doesn't. It's just the role kind of sucks. He's fine.
I kind of liked him, like his. This is just into like really micro moments here, but there's a moment where he's like wistfully nostalgic about when you had to really crack into a safe using extortors and stuff, and now it's just like computer shit.
You know
and
what
he's,
else?
Like, kind of bummed about that. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, that reminds me of Santa being bummed that everyone just wants video games now.
Yeah.
That's like a great detail. That they like use for like a joke, but like I wish was like that idea was threaded more into his.
Yeah, especially because it's a video. You're right. It's a video gamey movie. It would have been funny if there's a little more of a video game goof in it. I thought it was kind of funny that like
they keep pulling like the gag where they keep pulling shit out of the bag and there's different toys and it just keeps
that game. Was fun.
Like it's funny. Yeah.
Yeah, and I liked the he sees like a list that someone leaves for Santa and it's like cash, video games.
Right. Yeah.
Because my kid is 7 even, and she just wrote her letter to Santa. I just sent it out yesterday, and she wants a Nintendo Switch and a couple games, and she like couldn't think of anything else, and that kind of bummed me out, man, because I was like, oh, you don't want like, there's like no toys you want anymore, like there's not like some stuffed animal you're like dying to have, or like some, you know, Pokemon figure or something, like, and then she's like, no, she wants a Switch and some games, and like it makes sense, that's what happens when kids get older, but I was like, oh, I like that. You're right. That thread is in the movie, and they could have really developed that in a cool way, but they didn't really bother with that.
Yeah, it just felt like missed opportunity after missed opportunity for me after a while. But, you know,
It does what it says on the box. I understand people that enjoy it. We just inherently sound like assholes when you like talk about the types of people who will like
them. I know.
It sucks. It sucks. I'm sorry to talk like this.
It sucks to be like this. It sucks to be this type of person.
Sorry.
I do. I would like, you know, and hopefully my normie people I know wouldn't even listen to this podcast, but I would like recommend it to a fair number of people. I think that I feel like if someone was like, hey, I want to see Violent Night, should I bother? You know, depending on the person who it was, I would like maybe my mom, I would be like, you probably wouldn't think it was that funny. But like, you know, so I can think of some friends who I bet would be interested in seeing this. And I would say, yeah, you should go see it. You would have a good time. You'll have a good time with it. I don't mean that as like you would have a good time with it. I just mean like,
if you're really into horror like I am, I think it's like a coin flip whether you're gonna like it or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like
you might just be like after a hard day, you just need to relax and watch David Harbour beat up some guys. Or you might be kind of bummed that it doesn't go far enough, which is completely understandable too.
Absolutely. I think that's plenty on Violent Night in theaters now and will remain in theaters, you know, doing pretty well for a couple weeks.
Yeah,
so
you know, I saw the numbers came out like the not final because but the newest estimates 13.3. It's doing even better than we thought. So it's
oh my god,
it really is. You know, a decent sized little hit. Like I bet it'll make like 50 all said and done.
Yeah, I think it will too. I'm fascinated to see what what the BO boys have to say about this. I'll have to check out the BO boys pod this week. But yeah, still to be noted. That was Violent Night still opened in second to Black Panther, which is still a number one spot after 4 weeks. It's got like 17.5 this weekend. You know what I just found out, Jesse, is that my press screening of Avatar is not in fucking IMAX. They are playing Black Panther in IMAX that night still. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
There's a gap on Monday night in the IMAX. I feel like someone maybe fucked up the schedule and hopefully they fix it, but I'm imagining that because the Dolby theater's open, I think we're gonna have to see Avatar in Dolby, which seems like some fuck up.
The 3D will be cool. I mean, like, it's not like it was shot with IMAX cameras, but like, I am also, for that matter, I got a ticket for 9:30 Saturday morning the weekend comes out to see it in IMAX 3D.
I have a ticket that morning as well. Afternoon. Let me see.
That's great. That was a weird thing where they didn't have the afternoon show time for whatever reason.
I got the 2:15 for that day now, actually.
Okay.
I have a 10 a.m. or I don't know what I have. I'll have to double check.
You have
but
like six Avatar tickets.
I have two different tickets for sure because I'm coming in from out of town and don't know when I'm going to be back. And I wanted to see it as soon as possible. But now that I've actually got myself into the earlier press screening, I was all excited, but now I'm pissed off that it's not an IMAX. But anyway, I'm sure we'll talk about that on a bonus or maybe even a main episode. Who knows? We need to vamp. We need to do content. We got to do best horror of the year. We got to do most turkey shoot. We got to do. Oh, we forgot about the turkey shoot this year again. God damn it.
Oh, yeah.
We got so many episodes to do, you guys. Thank you for listening. Sorry to anyone who just like keeps listening, waiting for Hellraiser. We're going to do it. I don't have a plan or a schedule. It's for the new year. We're going to keep on rolling with new stuff through the new year. And with that, check out the Patreon for more. Bye.
Lifestyle.
Forgive me if I don't stay around to watch. I just can't cope with the freaky stuff.